Up next, you'll hear The Wager by William E. Speer.
It was 15 years ago, this very night. I'd had a party for bankers and investors, men and women of considerable wealth, and academics and intellects, men and women of considerable learning. One of the academics, Terry Moores, said capital punishment was out of date and
immoral. And unsuitable for the country. The death penalty should be replaced by imprisonment for life.
Hear, hear. Well said, Terry.
I don't agree with you. I've not tried either the death penalty or imprisonment for life.
Well,
but the death penalty is far more moral and humane than imprisonment for life.
Well put, Geraldine. I quite agree.
How can anyone come to that conclusion?
Capital punishment kills a man at once, but lifelong imprisonment kills him slowly. The executioner who kills in one moment is more humane than the one who drags life out of you for years.
Both are equally immoral. Both have the same object. To take away life. The state is not God. It doesn't have the right to take away what it cannot restore.
Death penalty.
Better to be killed at once.
Stay alive. By all means, stay alive.
Death penalty.
Pat, you've been quiet on this issue. What does your young mind say?
The death sentence and the life sentence are equally immoral. But if I had to choose between the death penalty and imprisonment for life, I'd choose the second. To live under any circumstances is better than not to live at all.
No, 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 that's not true. I bet $5 million you wouldn't stay in solitary confinement for 5 years.
If your offer's genuine, then I accept the bet. But I wager 15 years, not five.
15 years? Done. Ladies and gentlemen, I stake $5 million.
Agreed. You stake your millions, and I stake my freedom.
Supper was a lively affair. I, smug in my hundreds of millions, taunted Pat. Loudly I counseled the inexperienced ideologue, saying,
"Think better of it, young one, while there's still time. To me, $5 million is nothing, a rounding error by my accountant. But you are losing 4 or 5 years of the best years of your life. You will not last beyond that."
What Geraldine says is true, and do not forget that voluntary confinement is a great deal harder to bear than compulsory. I wager another $5 million you do not last the 15 years.
I'll put up $5 million on Pat's behalf.
Count me in for the other five.
The thought that you have the right to step out into liberty at any moment will poison your whole existence in prison. I am sorry for you.
$10 million was wagered against Pat. Mere pennies to Sal and me. Unimaginable riches to Pat. But what was the object of the bet? Why should Pat give up 15 years of his life? Why should we throw away $10 million? Could we prove the death penalty was better or worse than imprisonment for life? No, no. It was all nonsensical and meaningless. Simple greed motivated by shallow youth. Mindless folly born of a rich and pampered life propelled me. Pat's imprisonment began that evening. He was confined to a small cottage on the furthest reaches of my estate surrounded by woods. Sal read the terms.
A watchman shall supervise the cottage at all times. You are prohibited from seeing or hearing any human being. Neither newspapers nor magazines are permitted. You may not have a television or radio.
No radio! Have mercy on him. A radio might spare his mind.
No radio. You may write letters, but you may not receive any. You may smoke, drink wine, read books, play music, or look out the window, but you must not leave the cottage.
Your term of imprisonment is exactly 15 years from midnight tonight, October 21st, 2007, until midnight, October 21st, 2022. If you break these conditions, if only 2 minutes before the end, we are released from our obligation to pay you $10 million.
With those words and the closing of a heavy wooden door, the imprisonment began. During the first 10 years, Pat's notes detailed his loneliness and depression. He played the piano constantly. He drank no wine and smoked no tobacco. He read mostly light novels or sensational adventures. In the second year, he stopped playing the piano and read only the classics. In the fifth year, he played the piano again. Often, the watchman heard Pat talking to himself late at night.
How could I have done this foolish thing? I'm stupid, greedy.
Or crying early in the morning. In the sixth year, the prisoner devoured languages, philosophy, and history. He requested new books each week, and we struggled to meet his requests. He consumed 600 volumes for the next 4 years. In the tenth year, he wrote a letter to us.
My dear jailers, I write these lines in 6 languages. Show them to people who know the languages. Let them read them. If they find not one mistake, I implore you to fire 2 shots over the cottage.
That violates the terms of the agreement.
It violates nothing. He has simply asked if his efforts are academically accurate.
The terms of his imprisonment call for solitary confinement. He asks us to cheat for him.
He asks for nothing of the sort.
Listen to the rest.
Those shots will show me that my efforts have not been thrown away. The geniuses of all ages and of all lands speak different languages, but the flame burns the same in all of them. If you only knew what unearthly happiness my soul now feels from understanding them.
Send the shots.
He's cheating.
That's not cheating.
Later, when everyone else had left the mansion, I crept out to the watchman's hut and fired 2 shots. At the same time, the stock market moved against me. My fortune, once grand and in the hundreds of millions, was halved. Just a bit of bad luck, I told Sal and Helen. But I prayed my luck would change. In his 11th, 12th, and 13th years of confinement, Pat sat still as a cross and read only the gospel. 600 learned volumes previously mastered were discarded for the thin, easily comprehended text of gospel. But if his new chosen text was easy to understand, the stock market was not.
Buy.
Sell.
Buy.
Buy. Sell.
The value of my investments halved again and teetered between recovery and further disaster. Small gains on one day were wiped out by losses on the next.
Sell.
At any price.
Sell. At any price. Sell it all. Sell it all.
I grasped at long shots, doubling and tripling my positions, only to watch my wealth disappear faster. In the last 2 years of confinement, the prisoner lurched into the natural sciences, to Byron and Shakespeare, to chemistry, medicine, and novels. The man plunged from philosophy to theology to history. He raced along, clutching for intellectual pieces amidst his emotional wreckage to keep himself afloat. My investments, once gaudy and buoyant as an ocean liner, had nearly sunk. Minor rallies occasionally lifted my wealth, only to dash it again. At length, the date and time of the final crushing wave surged before me. The date is 15 years since the imprisonment, 11:15 at night. Sal, my co-conspirator in the wager, joined me, as did the prisoner's friend, Helen.
In 45 minutes, it'll be 12 midnight.
Pat'll win the bet. Incredibly, stupendously, he'll win the bet.
And I'll be ruined, finished, bankrupt forever.
It's not that bad.
You must have set some aside.
No. I've doubled and tripled for years. My losses are many times what you've suffered. Cursed bet. Why didn't he die?
Pat will not let the bet ruin you.
He'll take my last penny and marry. He'll enjoy life and gamble on the stock market. All the while, I'll look at him with envy, like a beggar.
He'll help you.
That's even worse. He'll say the same thing every day. I'm indebted to you for the happiness of my life. Let me help you. No, it's too much.
Come back.
Where'll you be?
In my chambers, contemplating my financial death. My words were only partly true. I was going to my chambers, but the death I foresaw was the prisoner's, not mine. It was the only means of saving myself from bankruptcy and disgrace. I retrieved the keys to the cottage, 11:30. 1/2 hour until... The rain battered the trees and froze my bones. The woods were dark, except for one small light. I moved toward the light, and it grew constant and larger. The shadowy outline of walls dimly rose against the light. It was the man's cottage. Lights blazing, triumphantly, expectantly, richly. All was lost. I crept to the watchman's hut, but he wasn't there. I suspected he'd gone to sleep in the warm, dry greenhouse. Now was my chance. If I killed... No. If the prisoner died, the watchman would be blamed. He's responsible for the prisoner's safety. The prisoner would be found dead, and it would be the watchman's fault. I circled around to the window. He was seated at a table with his back to me. Books lay everywhere. On the chair, the table, the floor. He didn't move. One quarter of an hour separated me from ruin. I crept into the window and tapped on it. Nothing. I tapped again. I delicately eased the key into the wooden door and released the lock. My heart sank as the ancient spring announced my presence. I stood stock still for 3 minutes, but nothing happened. I went in. He was asleep. His long, shaggy hair was streaks of silver. His skin was taut, and he looked like a porcelain skeleton. Now was my chance. I'd throw him to the floor and suffocate him with a pillow. He couldn't resist, and the finest medical examiner in the county would say he died in his sleep. With the pillow in my left hand and my right ready to throw him to the ground, I readied for the task. That was when I saw his note. I stopped to read his words.
Tonight at midnight, I regain my freedom. But before I leave this room, it is necessary to say a few words to you. I despise freedom, life, health, and all that your books call the good things of the world. For 15 years I have been intently studying earthly life. Your books have given me wisdom. I know that I am wiser than you. You may be proud and fine, but death will wipe you off the face of the earth as though you were no more than mice burrowing under the floor. You have lost your reason and taken the wrong path. You have taken lies for beauty and hideousness for beauty. To prove to you how I despise all that you live by, I renounce the 10 million of which I once dreamed of as paradise. I shall go from here before the agreed time, midnight tonight.
His words shamed me, and I left the cottage. Never, even while foolishly betting millions in the stock exchange, never had I felt such loathing for myself. I slipped back into the mansion unseen by the others and hid in my chamber. It wouldn't take long for... A few minutes after midnight, Sal and Helen burst into my chambers.
Geraldine, come at once.
What's the matter?
Pat's gone.
Are you sure?
The watchman saw him climb out the window and run into the woods. You must come.
We went to the cottage. The door was open and everything was as I'd seen it a few minutes earlier. Sal and Helen searched the woods. I quietly pocketed Pat's note renouncing the 10 million.
You've just listened to The Wager, starring Katie Myers as young Geraldine, Jen Mitchell as old Geraldine, and Dick Beattie as Pat. Matt Strout performed as Sal, and Catherine Dorn performed as Helen. Terry was played by Al Kelly. Music was by Jason Oberholzer. Sound effects were provided by Katie Myers. I'm your announcer, Greg Pierce.